And good morning, good morning, good morning. Grover is here. We've got ICU beds. We're going to talk about corporate vaccination mandates. Rand Paul in the news this morning and the mainstream media pushing for war and junk food addiction all on the show. Grover is here, but I've got to get my calendar up here because I didn't have my stuff in front of me. I know you've got it all set, but I didn't have it. Okay, there we go. And podium. All right, good, good, good. All right. So let's start with our top story this morning, which is these ICU beds and the situation across the United States. You don't need to look far to see what's happening with the ICU bed situation in the United States. Just look at a lot of the different headlines this morning. Not the mainstream media, actually, really small media stations in different towns talking about the trouble with these with the amount of beds that they have available right now. And so here's, for instance, Texas. Let's take a look at Texas here. So this is dozens of hospitals are out of ICU beds as COVID cases overwhelm the state's capacity. The surge is by far the fastest and most aggressive that we've seen. The health authority in Austin and Travis County, they're saying, you know, please, please, please get vaccinated if you haven't already done so. And make sure that, you know, if you have the ability to go get vaccinated, please go and do that. The state is divided into 22 different trauma service areas. Half of them reported 10 or fewer ICU beds as of this weekend, as more than 9,400 COVID-19 patients filled the state's ICUs, which are reserved for patients who are the sickest or the most injured. The trauma service area that includes Laredo reported no ICU beds available, while the area that includes Abilene reported having one bed. So this is happening all across the South. Florida is in the same situation. Mississippi is also in the same situation. Here's what ICU nurses are saying about this in Mississippi. Take a listen.
Able to speak. Listen to what she told us.
What are they saying to you? Do they regret?
Please don't let me die. They regret not taking the vaccine. I've had multiple people tell me that they wish they would have taken it.
I've seen more death than I ever thought that I would see in my entire life. It's getting to a point where we need help. We've been helping as much as we can, and we need help from, you know, our community.
So what are the facts here? You know, people say, oh, that might be fake news. And say, you know, at some point you've got to you have to open your eyes and you have to look at the facts. Here are the pieces of data this morning from the hospitals in these areas. August 10th, massive surge. Look at this. As of August 10th, 87.9% of beds are in use. And 16% of these beds are in use of COVID-19 patients who are unvaccinated, according to the data. Here's how many Texas hospitals have run out of ICU beds. During the week ending August 5th, 53 Texas hospitals reported that their ICU beds were filled to capacity. Every week, the federal government releases these ICU capacity data reports of about 200 Texas hospitals. More than four ICU patients are four staffed ICU beds. Remarkable. So this morning, I spent the morning on the phone. You know, you look at this data, you say, okay, can we believe this data, et cetera, whatever. You want to be cynical? Okay, all you need to do is open your eyes. Like, Philip, what are you experiencing up in Oregon?
Right now, so Oregon just is going back to a mandatory mandate in enclosed places. Washington State hasn't quite hit that yet, but the cases are definitely rising in both areas.
Yeah. And so I decided to get on the phone this morning. So I spent the morning on the phone with hospitals throughout Arkansas, Mississippi, and Texas this morning, and calling the ICU. I was calling the ICU departments and all of these hospitals. Now, bear in mind, you know, for a lot of them, they've been working long shifts right now. They are overwhelmed, these nurses and doctors who are dealing with these ICU patients that are coming and that are unvaccinated, overwhelming numbers of this. So here's just a little taste of me on the phone earlier today.
ICU, how can I help you?
Hi, my name is Clayton Morris. I'm with Morning Invest, the morning show, and just calling to confirm or find out how many ICU beds you have available right now.
Oh, hold on, sir. Let me have you talk to our charge nurse.
Okay.
So talking to the charge nurse, getting that information from hospital after hospital after hospital. Here's just one example of Arkansas, in Jonesboro, Arkansas, this morning when I spoke to the, listen to this. This is unbelievable. And by the way, they're so overwhelmed, they cannot come to the phone. Now, I feel bad even asking these questions, but you know, I want to get this data out to people. So here.
NEA.
Hi, could you transfer me to the intensive care unit, please?
Yes, one moment.
The NEA Baptist Fowler Fam.
So this is in Jonesboro, Arkansas.
I see this, Tabitha.
Hi, this is Clayton Morris with Morning Invest, the morning show. Just calling to find out what the bed capacity is at NEA at this hour. Are you still at full capacity?
Let me forward you my charge, okay?
Okay, sure.
So then getting me over to the charge nurse, okay? So then I wait on hold for about 5 minutes going through that process.
Patient experience, from adding new doctors and specialties to acquiring the latest technology, NEA Baptist offers the right care in one place. Thank you for calling NEA Baptist Memorial Hospital, located at 4800 East Johnson Avenue in Jonesboro. NEA Baptist is a...
So waiting and waiting, waiting and waiting, waiting and waiting, waiting and waiting.
...affiliated with the Baptist Memorial Healthcare System. Your call is important to us, so please stay on the line, and we'll be with you in just a moment. NEA Baptist offers a wide range of surgical admissions...
To last week about... Hi there. I'm just calling to follow up. We had spoken last week about the number of ICU bed capacity. This is Clayton from the Morning Invest News Show. Are you still at near full capacity?
We have one bed.
You have one bed left. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Common refrain. So speaking right to the intensive care. So when someone's like, this is fake news, whatever. No, it's real. Okay, just pick up the phone yourself, call these hospitals and don't bother them. Call the intensive care units and talk to them. They are overwhelmed, absolutely overwhelmed right now with these cases. And again, unvaccinated, according to the health authority, at hospital after hospital after hospital that I called. Unvaccinated. Which begs the question then this morning, what about the people that are decided, hey, I didn't want to get a vaccine. I didn't want to get a vaccine because, you know, it's all propaganda, it's all a hoax, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, right? So they don't want to get a vaccine. They want to take their own health into their own hands, right? It's a free country. You're absolutely able to do that. Absolutely. You should be allowed to do that if you don't want to get a vaccine or, you know, you just don't believe in it. Okay, fine. That you are. It's a free country. No one can tell you to go and do this, right? Absolutely. They cannot tell you to go and do this. Well, then, and you say, I don't trust it. I don't trust science. I don't trust the new. I don't trust any of this. Great. Then here, let's make a deal. How about this? When you get sick and you can't breathe and you're dying, then why not stay home and not then go and get saved by the science that you don't believe in? Go to the hospital then. Is that something we should agree on? I mean, it's a fair question. I'm just throwing it out there, right? You get sick because you didn't get a vaccine, and now you have to go to the intensive care, right? The vaccine was never meant to keep people from getting COVID. It was meant to keep people out of the ICU with severe cases and symptoms where you might actually die as a result of it. Like if you're 45 years old and you get COVID, well, if you've got the vaccine, chances are you're not going to go to the ICU. You might have mild symptoms, and you might need to stay home from work, like the flu or something. But if you got the vaccine, it was never meant like a condom to totally prophylact the whole situation, right? So I'm just throwing it out there. Well, here's someone who's gone viral overnight because his wife is in stage 4 cancer and had to be turned away from an ICU bed as a result of this. Take a listen to this.
Hey, folks, how you doing? I just got a quick question about this whole COVID, not getting vaccinated and running to the hospital once you get the virus deal, because it is out of control. All right. And I'm going to give you a quick story on why I think it's out of control. Last week, I had to bring my wife into the hospital. She has stage 4 breast cancer. She was dealing with some symptoms and I had to bring her in to get some fluid drained. She was having some pain, blah, blah, blah. She was in there for 2 days. On the third day, she honestly should have stayed one more day, maybe two more days. Okay. But on the third day, instead of draining her fluid and what they wanted to do, they told us that she had to be discharged. Because they had no room left in the hospital because of COVID. Here's my question. Why 99% of everybody that's in the hospital with COVID right now is unvaccinated, okay? If you really fucking believe that COVID's not real, and you really believe that it's not a big deal, and you really believe that we don't, that you don't need to get the vaccine, that is your fucking right, okay? I'm not gonna argue with you about that. What I am gonna argue with about is you running to the fucking hospital once you get the virus. If you don't trust the medical field to prevent you from getting it, why do you trust them to cure you from it? Why do you run to the fucking hospital? If you really believe that COVID's not a big deal and it's not this, that, the other, and you don't get the vaccine because of, stick to your fucking guns and keep your motherfucking ass at home. Stop running to the hospital, putting everybody else at fucking risk, and in turn, the collateral damages. People like my wife who actually need medical fucking help for a chronic fucking disease get kicked out of the hospital because your dumb ass is too stupid to go get a fucking vaccine shot. Keep your ass at home. If you really believe COVID's not a big deal, prove it. Stick to your fucking guns. Keep your ass at home and fucking deal with it.
Wow.
You want to see that guy in an alleyway? Because you were the guy that didn't get the vaccine and his wife, who has stage 4 cancer, couldn't get the bed that she needed to get the fluid drained because she's dying, you know? You want to see that guy? Wait, you were the reason? You. Come here, little punk. You were the reason? You didn't get the vaccine, you little 40-year-old punk? My wife's dying. You took up an ICU bed?
Yeah, that's, I mean, that's, and that's such a, like, a, I mean, it's a justified, righteous anger, you know? That's that.
Yeah. I mean, I would feel that way. Yeah. But it's the same people, you know, it's the same people that say, well, I don't believe this science. I believe it's all a hoax. I don't believe this science. So then you're going to run to the hospital to have people take time out of their day just because you're on some conspiracy theory bent? Like, and these people who are literally there helping people with heart attacks and strokes and trauma, literally head trauma, like car accident cases, they can't, they have to turn them away because they literally, then they have to fly them via helicopter to another hospital where that person might die because it was too far away from where the accident happened, thanks to some idiot who decides not to get the vaccine. Again, you're right. Just don't use a You're absolutely, it's up to you. Just don't go use an ICU beds then. Don't do it. Don't suck them up. I'm totally on board with this. I'm totally on board with this. You know, at this point. And so you want to actually know the data? Let's get into the data. So I'm all about facts here. So the new data out this morning, fully vaccinated people have made up as few as 0.01%. And most of these people are immunocompromised and they're like 90 years old. Who are now, who have been vaccinated and who have to go to the hospital. And as many as 5% of those hospitalized with the virus in those states, as few as 0.2% of as, and as many as 6% of those who have died. Very small. And here's how the states break down. So these are breakthrough deaths, people who have actually gotten like a COVID variant and died as a result. 0.4% in Alabama. Alaska, 3.3%. That's two people. Two people. 34. And by the way, when you have elderly populations in certain states, like in Arizona, when you have immunocompromised individuals, it's not the virus that's killing people. It pushes them over the line, basically. Same is true in California and Colorado. Look at this. This is the column you want to see right here. Like, this is the breakthrough deaths, right? Fraction. Very small number. Very small number, overwhelmingly small. And then I wanted to follow up on some misreported information about Israel, because there's been some fake news kind of going around about Israel that's been spread on social media about vaccines and claims in that there are a high number of vaccinated deaths in Israel. It just turns out it's not true. I spoke to my sources this morning in Israel, by the way, who said it's just a joke. It's not true at all. That those deaths, there's been like three, and they are over the age of like 85, and they were already immunocompromised, and they caught a version of like the Delta variant. So they were already not in the best of health to begin with. And then like getting the Delta variant on top of it, pushed them into the ICU at that age, immunocompromised. Here's the data out of Israel this morning. Take a look at your screen here. And here at the, and you see that these numbers are very, very small. And speaking to my sources there, said, no, this is not true. Simply not true. So again, we need to be very, very careful about some of these like misleading posts on social media, twisting data out of Israel. And so it's just not true. All the talk though right now in Israel as of this morning is about this third booster and the Delta variant. And so you have a lot of the elderly population there. Remember, Israel is like mostly all vaccinated. Now they're moving towards getting to try to get this additional booster because the Moderna booster is apparently much more effective against Delta. And so if you're a 95-year-old person, yes, you're probably not, like an early bird. If you get Delta variant and it pushes up some factor in your chart, it could lead to you then being rushed to the hospital at that age. It's a chance. And as the WHO says right on its website, it's never meant to actually keep you from getting COVID. It's meant to keep you from staying out of the ICU. And that's, I think, the most important thing that's being overlooked here in all of these discussions about this. So that's the news this morning. So thanks to any of the hospitals that are watching this morning that I spoke to this morning to get this latest ICU data. I appreciate you taking the time out of your shift to bring us this information. And Godspeed to all of those nurses who are working around the clock right now to take care of these people. I think that's, you're doing some great work down there. So thanks to all those people who are just working like crazy right now. We've got more news to get to on the show. I wanted to talk about some of these big corporations on Wall Street that are pushing for vaccine mandates. And we'll tell you some of the hypocrisy surrounding some of these moves. I'll get to that in a second. But first, I want to tell you about our friends over at Podium. So Podium, your customers have grown to expect a simpler way of doing business no matter what your product is. And that's why more than 90,000 local businesses of all sizes have turned to Podium. So whether you have one location or you have 1,000 locations, Podium can help you stay ahead of the game. What is Podium? Well, Podium is a fantastic way for you to connect with your customers. It's the ultimate messaging platform. You can, if you have a question, like if you want to stay in, you have a question for a company, guess what? They can answer a text message question. They want to collect reviews, like, hey, you bought flowers at our local flower company. Thank you so much. We hope that you enjoyed the flowers. Would you mind leaving us a review on Google Reviews? And that's how Podium works. You can schedule appointments or deliveries. And we have a local dentist office that we use that uses Podium. And I told them about it. I said, hey, they're a sponsor of our show. And they said, we love Podium. We use it. It enables us to schedule appointments with our clients, follow up with us, payment collection, just sending a text message. It works great. Like here's an example, a car dealership. They're selling more cars right now by offering text messaging. A dealer just sold a $50,000 truck in 4 text messages. So dealerships are running profitable service centers with easier appointment scheduling and reminders like, hey, don't forget, tomorrow you're dropping your car off for that tune-up. And like I said, a dentist that I go to uses Podium, and they absolutely love it. They're able to follow up, make sure appointments are on time. No one's missing their appointments. They've been able to totally reduce the number of people that miss appointments by using Podium. So today's customers expect on-demand everything from local businesses. Stay ahead of the competition with Podium. They have free plans for growing businesses, plus all the power growing businesses need to scale. You can get started today for free at podium.com/invest. That's P-O-D-I-U-M, podium.com/invest. I thank them very much for their support of Morning Invest on this Thursday. So thank you so much. Well, I found this to be a really troubling story. Next on the rundown, I don't know if you've been watching, but big Wall Street corporations are moving towards mandates of vaccines. And, that's their right, right? They can do that. And you can say, you know what? I don't want to work for you as a company. And I'm going to go someplace else that doesn't mandate vaccines. I've seen companies that are proud to say, hey, we do not mandate vaccines. So come work for us. So you're getting this like back and forth right now, this sort of tug of war. Fine. Each company can do what it wants, right? No government can tell you to go out and, I mean, our government, a free country, can't tell you to go get a vaccine, right? That's totally anti-American. It's up to you to do what you want with your body in that way. But a number of big Wall Street companies are now pushing for vaccine mandates, and they're doing it, though, in an odd way. And I found this to be really troubling. And you know, the mainstream media is not focusing on this angle of the story, and I thought we would hear this morning. For instance, McDonald's, NBC, and other big companies are revising their reopening plans, and they're asking their corporate workers must be vaccinated. The media giant and Capital One are postponing return to office dates, but they will require vaccinations. Okay, so what's the problem with this, Clayton? McDonald's Corp said in a note to employees Wednesday that all of the company's U.S. corporate workers must be fully vaccinated by September 27th as businesses impose new employee rules amid rising COVID cases. Again, Clayton, what's the problem with that? Like, you're vaccinated, Clayton. Yes, I am. But the problem I have is that they are not requiring their frontline workers, those people in the food industry, those people who are in the McDonald's location serving you your quarter pounder with cheese. Why? Because they know that requiring those people to do that who are making, you know, barely minimum wage, and you probably won't even give them a day off to go and do it, they're going to tell you to go pound sand and they'll walk across the street and go work for somebody else. So McDonald's is seeing a resurgence of McDonald's global chief police officer, people officer Heidi Capozzi said the message to the U.S. employees, a resurgence of infections caused by COVID-19 variants has many of us uneasy. We've heard from many of you, meaning the executives, that you would feel more comfortable returning to the office. You have more certainty if you knew more with more certainty that your colleagues were vaccinated. So, to be clear, the chain is not mandating vaccinations for restaurant workers, but they are demanding that their executives in their executive offices get vaccines. Do you see? I mean, am I missing something here?
I mean, it seems almost like it's falsely quoted, but the "let them eat cake" quote. They're like, you know what? We don't care about our rank and file employees. We need to take care of the people that make the most money out of this situation.
Right. So the executives who make a lot of money, who you know aren't going to go across town and start working for Nike or another corporation, right? They're going to stay because they get great benefits. They got great health care. You know, they're going to stay there. They get great salaries at the McDonald's corporation, right? At the executive level, right? Their profits are off the charts. Right? So they're like, okay, we want you to be safe here in the office. We heard you. We heard you. We know that we're returning to the office would you want to know that your colleagues have been vaccinated. So do not the restaurant workers who bring in all of your money deserve the same level of treatment? I mean, it sounds to me like a complete double standard. Am I wrong? Maybe I'm just looking at this wrong. I mean, in the chat, does anyone feel that way? I mean, it seems to me like this is a total double standard.
Well, I mean, it's a double standard that we've become accustomed to it's the same double standard that's in healthcare, that's in almost every aspect of American social life, is that the top wage earners, they're fine. They're taking care of themselves. That's their biggest issue. And the rank and file workers, you know, they're replaceable. They're peons.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so wouldn't it make sense to, I don't know, provide it maybe, we are concerned about you just as much as our executive branch. Like what you're basically saying is, we want you to be safe. And our frontline restaurant workers, it's okay. We don't really care as much. Like, you don't have to do anything. Like, it's up to you. Because, you know, you're low wage pay and you're replaceable. Basically, that's what it says to me, is that you're replaceable.
I mean, that's exactly what they're saying. That's, you know, the only thing they didn't do was use those exact words.
Exactly. You know, another bank, for instance, Capital One on Wednesday also delayed the reopening and tearing across our office experience. So unvaccinated employees will continue to work from home and will be supported in doing so, the email said. And they're going to have a vaccination policy through the first quarter of 2022 at their corporate headquarters. But what about the branches? But it does not, again, apply to the branch employees. Isn't this amazing? I mean, it's like, I'm like, the Wall Street Journal doesn't even write a headline with any irony at all. Like, there's no mention here in this story about this double standard. About,
well, because it's a feel good piece. They want you to feel good about these companies. You know, like, look, they're requiring this. Look at the great job they're doing.
Like, yeah, hey, all of these good executives, you know, they're going to get the vaccine. We want that office environment to be fantastic for these employees. But branches and the restaurants that actually make us the money and so forth, you don't have to worry about that. Vaccine requirement doesn't apply to branch employees because we really don't give a rat's behind about you. Okay.
Oh. I can just imagine the corporate meeting where somebody's like, but what about the branch employees? And somebody's like, what about them?
Right. they make $15 an hour. Like, what are we paying them for? Like, what do we care? Yeah. Those are the branches. We care about our corporate headquarters, right? That's what we care about. Unbelievable. Not unbelievable. I shouldn't be surprised about this kind of stuff anymore, but this is how these executives and all of these employees at these burger joints, you know, who are making the burgers, who are there at 5 a.m. I used to work at McDonald's and I did the morning shift, you know, and I was there at 5 a.m. and I would open the store with two other people, someone who ran the front register and John, who and I worked on the grill together. And he was 75 years old and he couldn't afford dental care. He couldn't afford. And so literally he had like only like two teeth. He couldn't afford dental care because, you know, McDonald's didn't pay for any kind of benefits. He was there at 5 a.m. opening this restaurant so that McDonald's could reap the benefits. And it was one of the most popular locations in Pennsylvania on this one particular intersection too. It was filled every morning with lines out the door to get breakfast. So executives are making money. John can't even get dental care or health care.
I managed a Burger King right out of high school because I worked in the same Burger King all through high school, and I managed it after I graduated. And as an assistant manager, I made $6.25 an hour.
You're in charge of people.
$6.25
an hour. How were your health benefits, by the way?
I mean, I got to take home all of the cheeseburgers at the end of the night that were left over. That was my benefit.
Unbelievable. Yeah, we're going to talk about junk food addiction here in a little bit, so maybe you can weigh in more on that. Yeah, you don't get health benefits, but you certainly got to take home a bag of cheeseburgers at the end of the night. Now, let me know your thoughts on this. Are you surprised by these big companies only allowing or only pushing for vaccine mandates among their executive staff so they're taken care of? But screw the little guy. Once again, we don't care about them. They're replaceable. Don't care about them. Unbelievable. Well, let's talk about a big bowl of hypocrisy this morning. And our big bowl of hypocrisy segment this morning is none other than Rand Paul. Now, you know Rand Paul, right? He's the one who has continued to talk about the vaccine as, not a problem. And I think he's even going so far as to call it a hoax. He slams Dr. Fauci any chance he gets about, rightly so, questioning Dr. Fauci about, you know, about this research at this Wuhan lab. Of course, absolutely question. That's great. But basically saying that, hey, this is not really a problem, not pushing for vaccines. Don't talk about vaccines. Why should the United States be telling Americans to get vaccines because it could save lives? It's not our business. We shouldn't be doing that. Well, it turns out Rand Paul has been enjoying the benefits of vaccine research, he and his wife. And we just learned today that Rand Paul failed to disclose at the time that his wife, and therefore him, by, you know, that their investments as a family, they bought stock in the companies behind COVID treatments. But under the law, they're supposed to report these stock investments under the Stock Act as a senator within 45 days, disclosing the investments that you're making. Well, Paul decided to wait and not disclose it, and waited instead 16 months later to disclose that they had purchased stock in a company that was the first, by the way, to roll out coronavirus treatment. Are you surprised by this? Senator Rand Paul revealed Wednesday that his wife bought stock in Gilead Sciences, which makes it an antiviral drug used to treat COVID-19. And guess what? They bought it when the Senate was literally having meetings and about how bad this whole thing was. A month, by the way, before we ever went into a full lockdown. February 26th. Before the threat from the coronavirus. So you're sitting there in the Senate. You're getting these meetings, you're learning about coronavirus, you're going home, you're talking to your wife about this. You as a family, you make an investment into the very the pharmaceutical companies that are set to benefit from making treatments around COVID. So you know this information, right? You know this information before the American people are made aware of this information. The disclosure in a filing in the Senate came 16 months late. He was supposed to do it on the 45-day reporting deadline. Why didn't he wait? Why did he wait on that? In the Stock Act, it's designed to combat insider trading. Experts in corporate and securities law said the investment, and especially the delayed reporting of it, undermines trust in government and raises questions about whether Kentucky Republican's family had sought to profit from the non-public information that was looming in the health emergency. And plans by the United States government to combat it. Several senators sold large amounts of stock in January or February of last year, prompting a handful of insider trading probes. The senator ought to have an explanation for the trade, and more importantly, why it took him almost a year and a half to discover it from his wife. Oh, we really don't think that she told him about it? I mean, come on. Right?
Are they setting her up to get thrown under the bus? It sounds an awful lot like she's getting set up.
I know. Well, it was my wife. You know, that's exactly like a Ted Cruz move. Yep. I don't know what my wife's doing. She hates America. She's the one that did it, not me.
He'll laugh it off like some, like, oh, well, my wife holds the checkbook. Ha, ha, ha.
Kelsey Cooper, a spokesperson for Paul, said the senator completed a reporting form for his wife's investments last year, but learned only recently while preparing an annual disclosure that the form had not been transmitted. Oh, they just forgot to turn in the form. So I've got an itchy nose today.
Clerical error.
I learned about it. We filled it. You know, we just didn't turn it in. He sought guidance from the Senate Ethics Committee, she said, and filed the supplemental report on Wednesday, along with an annual disclosure, which was due in May and submitted 2 months late. So, okay, let me be clear on this. He failed to disclose it in the 45-day window, waited almost 16 months. Okay, that was one piece that was late. Then the supplemental report, along with his annual disclosure, was also late. That was supposed to be filed back in May of this year. And he didn't do it. She also said Paul's wife, Kelly, is an author and a former communications consultant and lost money on this investment, which she made with her own earnings. The purchase was of between $1,000 and $15,000 of stock in Gilead, which makes the antiviral drug known as remdesivir. So they were, you know, remdesivir gained emergency use authorization from the Food and Drug Administration last year. Oh, interesting. So when did they know about this, that it was going to gain approval, that they were going to push the Trump administration on giving this company, Gilead Sciences, a sudden, you know, push, a sudden bump from the Food and Drug Administration? And they gave it to President Trump. They gave this drug to President Trump when he was sick with COVID. Wow. It's interesting, huh?
Isn't he on a business committee?
You know, he's a member of the Senate Health Committee.
Yeah.
And he had a January meeting with Trump on coronavirus in January. And they make this public information, an existence of public information causing Gilead stock to rise. An expert in securities law at Columbia University doesn't rule out the possibility that the center gained additional knowledge in private, like with the meeting with President Trump, Like, what do we have that currently works? Oh, what about that remdesivir drug, you know, from Gilead Sciences? Oh, yeah, that one's out there. It's kind of, you know, it's used to treat hepatitis C, to treat hepatitis C and Ebola, and they maybe alter it. So let's get that thing funneled up. Honey, I just got a tip on a stock. Who knows? But I do know you waited 16 months to tell us about it. And you go to great lengths to tell us about how things are a hoax. I just love the hypocrisy here. Literally, like, you know, your family's investing in coronavirus medicines. While at the same time, you're basically trying to keep people from even, you know, going out and getting a vaccine. Or taking, you know, taking care of their own health in this situation. Or don't put a mask on and all of these things. I love the hypocrisy.
Well, it's funny because as he's more apt to push for the treatment of, because if you're pushing for if you're fighting against the prevention of a disease, then what he's fighting for essentially is the treatment of it. And it's odd that he would be investing in an antiviral as opposed to a vaccine when it really just plays right into that same, you know, like let's not worry about the prevention because I've got a lot of money riding on the treatment.
Exactly. So, you know, I stand to make money off of people who get sick, essentially. So don't worry about it. Don't worry about this virus. And by the way, having private meetings in the Senate. I mean, it's the same thing here on this channel that we slam Nancy Pelosi for, right? Very same thing. Like, how are you making millions of dollars on tech trades with your stocks when you're literally writing and involved in legislation that has an effect on these tech companies? And so you're investing in these different tech companies and making millions of dollars. That's hypocrisy. That's also, you know, shouldn't be allowed. You should not be able to invest in any company that you have some sort of regulatory oversight or power behind, right? We can throw Martha Stewart in prison, but you're making millions of dollars off of legislation that's coming down the pike from Congress. You're allowed to make these trades. And then, by the way, what's the recourse here? So he doesn't disclose this information. He doesn't tell anybody about this information. 16 months late, 45-day the window closes. Is he going to be censured by the Senate? What's going to happen? Anything? Anything at all going to happen? Senate ethics violation? Hand slapped? I mean,
it's like, you know, like gang mentality where they all need to commit the same crime in front of each other so that, because they're the only ones policing themselves. But you can't have what's Nancy Pelosi who is guilty of the same thing. What's she going to do about it? You know, like none of them can push forward to investigate the others. Not really, because they're all guilty of the same thing.
Right. You know, I mean, are we, you know, we had the Department of Justice, which, you know, the Department of Justice investigated several members of Congress for insider trading. They closed those probes. Should they be holding an investigation on Paul? Paul was the first U.S. senator to test positive for COVID. He's repeatedly rebuked public health guidance and has publicly challenged Dr. Fauci on it. So, yeah, you should answer these questions, Dr. Paul. That's what we're asking you to do. Got more news to get here in a second, but I want to tell you about our friends today over at Policy Genius. Huge fans of Policy Genius, as you know. As you get ready for back to school season, want to secure some life insurance on that to-do list between buying a protractor and some number two pencils, Policy Genius makes it easy to compare quotes and get you covered. Summer's almost over, and that means responsibility is about to rear its ugly head again. So get ahead of it, get ahead of reality, and get life insurance done now with Policy Genius. You can get free quotes in minutes. Look, if someone relies on you for financial support, whether it's a child, an aging parent, or even a business partner, you need life insurance. You know, in Europe, they won't even let you buy a house without getting life insurance. You have to get life insurance because what if something happens to you? You don't want to left. I mean, and they've thought it through. They don't want relatives being stuck holding the bag on things that you need to pay for because you didn't have life insurance. That's why Policy Genius makes it so easy to compare quotes from over a dozen top insurers all in one place. Why compare? Well, you could save 50% or more on life insurance by comparing quotes with Policy Genius. You could save $1,300 or more per year on life insurance by using Policy Genius to compare your policies. And eligible applicants can get covered in as little as a week thanks to their award-winning policy options. And it swaps the standard medical exam requirement for a simple phone call. And this exclusive policy was recently rated number one by Forbes, higher than options from Ladder, Ethos, and Bestow, those other companies. So it's so easy to get started. Just go to policygenius.com to get started right now. All you need to do is go to policygenius.com right now to get started. When it comes to insurance, it's nice to get it right. Thanks, Policy Genius, for their support of Morning Invest. Appreciate it. How's everyone doing in the chat today? How's everyone doing here?
As far as I can tell, everybody's doing okay.
Guys doing great in the chat today. Dean Thomas, Tan Devon is here, Donald Ford, Bandits, Bud, Kristen Swenson. Kristen says the remdesivir manufacturer is charging $3,120 per patient for a 5-day treatment. Well, it must be nice to be an investor in that company, huh?
Yeah, that's just slightly more than a Tylenol in a hospital, right?
Yeah. You know, Linda.
Go ahead. I was going to say somebody was asking the chat earlier if I had a dog, and I was just going to comment, no, I don't. I don't. I have a daughter, not a dog.
Linda Evans says, if everyone does their research like you do, Clayton, there are many questions about rushing a vax like they did, and you can find what's and you can find what's in this vaccine. Exactly. Yeah, we should remember that this vaccine is pretty darn weak, relatively speaking. Like if someone, we now know based on doctors I've spoken to that antibodies in people who've had COVID are way higher than the antibodies from the vaccine. We know that to be the case.
If I can chime in on this, this might be a contradictory statement, but so we didn't rush the vaccine any more than so like the analogy I like to think of is, you know, like a car company can create a new model of a car every year because all of the structure for building a car is already there. They're just making minor modifications. So we've known about coronaviruses as a virus for a very long time. We've been working on vaccines that deal with the novel corona as a virus itself.
Right.
So it wasn't like we rushed the vaccine from beginning to end. It was just finding out those markers, they're basically like sugar compounds on the outside of the virus that allow it to function. And it's just finding out that one structure in a vaccine that works with it. So it's not really like we started beginning to end to rush this out. We were almost already there.
Yeah, no, that's not contradictory because I've mentioned that here on the show multiple times, how we had, I mean, for almost a decade or more, they had been analyzing bird flu and SARS COVID and all of this. So they already had much of the structure already completed. It's like the variants and the slight differentials and how these things are different. Exactly. So it did not take them long. Yes, it hasn't been approved by the FDA yet. So these are emergency use authorizations, but they are not meant to keep you from getting COVID. They are meant to keep you out of the ICU. Right. And so if you do get COVID, it's meant to maybe, you know, you metabolize it very easily or you get mild symptoms if you get the vaccine. But all in all, the vaccine is pretty weak. And I talked to a source in Israel this morning who said, you know, one thing you need to remember about like Pfizer and Moderna, these are public companies with huge shareholder interests and public facing. They do not want some incredibly powerful vaccine that's going to, you know, that's going to have all kinds of side effects. So basically the goal is like have as minimal side effects as possible, as strong enough, but not super strong so that it doesn't cause people to have like any kinds of side effects. And it's not super strong, get it out to the public as quickly as we can. And that's essentially what these vaccines are. They're not like, it's not like you become Superman when you put these, you know, take these things. It's like, it's giving you a little bit of the virus to protect you in the future if you should happen to get, you know, actually catch it and prevent you from going to the ICU. That's essentially what these emergency use authorizations are. And yes, they'll get better over time, you know? So.
Well, it's like another analogy would be sort of like, you know, the United States arming a rebel group against a stronger force. Like, we're just giving you all of the weapons. You still got to go fight the battle yourself. Like, we're not going to actually, you know, so it's like, that's kind of what the vaccine is. It's giving your body the armaments to fight against the virus. It's not putting a shell around you so that the virus just bounces off of you. You know, it's
right. Yeah, it's not like in Super Mario Brothers where you get the flower, you know, you turn invincible for 30 seconds and you can run through
the star.
Yep. Yeah, the flower gives you the fireballs.
Yeah.
Linda, Linda in our chat says, who in our chat said this? Oh, Tracy Pouse says, where do we find accurate COVID reporting, Clayton? Hi, I'm from Mississippi. I mean, hopefully from our show. Like, I spent the morning on the phone with ICU nurses at hospitals across Mississippi and Arkansas and Texas. And, you know, what they're telling me is that their beds are at capacity. They're overrun. And the reason they're over capacity is because they're filled with unvaccinated people. So they're having to turn away other trauma cases. I mean, I would talk to your local hospitals and health authorities. I mean, go right to the sources. I mean, these nurses are up all night working and they're seeing this. And I played this earlier, but here's a Mississippi nurse. Here's a group of Mississippi ICU nurses in intensive care units. Here's what they had to say about it.
Able to speak. Listen to what she told us.
So this was in Mississippi.
What are they saying to you? Do they regret? Please don't let me die. They regret not taking the vaccine. I've had multiple people tell me that they wish they would have taken it.
I've seen more death than I ever thought that I would see in my entire life. It's getting to a point where we need help. We've been helping as much as we can, and we need help from, you know, our community.
Yeah. Luigi Valentino says, you're not a doctor, but you play one on your YouTube channel. I'm not a doctor. I'm reporting what I'm hearing for the nurses. So
I know I'm not a doctor, but I did go to school for molecular biology, but I don't consider myself like a molecular biologist or an expert on this at all. You know, like I did take classes on virology, molecular virology, but I mean, I'm not a doctor.
Yeah. I would say that, I would say that you have a lot more experience in that regard than most people do. Like working with viruses. Yes, I would say that. Same people, Luigi says, same people that screamed Russia, Russia, Russia for 5 years believe everything you say. First of all, I was one of the, if you understand me and this channel, I don't know how long you've watched, Luigi, but we've been talking about the Russia hoax for a long, long time and how that's been debunked multiple times. So hope you know that on our channel. We're not the same as other channels, by the way. I don't know.
Someone had asked if I'm vaccinated, and yes, I was vaccinated in May because I had to do some work travel.
Right. Yeah, Stephen was asking. Yeah, and I was vaccinated in June. So anyway, that's that part of the story. Let's get to some other news this morning on the show. I want to talk about what's going on in the mainstream media right now and the push for war. All you need to do is look at, turn on your nightly newscasts. I mean, here's Google News today. Google News, an arm of the mainstream media, of course. Biden administration, look at all the, I mean, this is the top headlines on Google News. Biden administration tries to mobilize international diplomatic effort to halt the Taliban. Politico, Biden on Afghanistan, not my problem. BBC News, Afghan capital may fall within weeks as Taliban fighters advance across the country. Opinion in the Washington Post, the Biden administration's response to the Taliban offensive is delusional. CNN, fear and resentment reign in Afghanistan as the Taliban overruns more cities. The mainstream media loves war. The mainstream media is fueled by billionaires who make tons of money off of war. They make money when we are at war. They are a part of the military-industrial complex and have been for decades, right? So when the mainstream media spends their nightly newscasts talking about war and why we need to be scared of this particular country or that, and makes their money off of war, like CNN, by the way. CNN is built off of war. You should be questioning that. I love this article, though, today from Politico. Biden on Afghanistan, not my problem. First of all, he didn't say it's not his problem, but if he did, I would agree with him. The president is unwilling to rethink his decision to withdraw U.S. troops, even as Afghanistan unravels faster than expected. And by the way, President Trump ran on ending the war in Afghanistan as a complete disaster. And he slammed Jeb Bush, said, your brother got us into these phony wars in Afghanistan and in Afghanistan. It's time to bring these people home. And he got rousing applause. Did he? No, he didn't. Did he expand the war there? No, he didn't. but it didn't bring them home. So now President Biden, who is by all accounts a warmonger, right? He has supported airstrike after airstrike after airstrike under the Obama administration. He ends the war in Afghanistan somewhat, ramps up airstrikes. And so now the mainstream media doesn't know how to handle it. Like, you know, they're kind of like, well, wait a second. He's our guy. Like CNN's like, he's our guy. But man, what's going on in Afghanistan is, you know, we need to make our money off of war again. We need to make sure that this in military industrial complex keeps churning and burning and churning here. What do we do? Let's call him delusional. Biden on Afghanistan. Not my problem, says Politico. As the Taliban blitz across Afghanistan, U.S. officials scramble to assess just how quickly the government in Kabul could fall. President Joe Biden is recalibrating his message to Americans. Where he once insisted that 20 years of U.S. backing had left Afghan forces capable of defending themselves, Biden and his aides have shifted to a more cold-blooded mantra. If they can't, that's not our problem. Inside the administration, top aides are just trying to keep up with the rapidly changing battlefield. U.S. officials now believe Kabul could be surrounded or fall under Taliban control within weeks. And even the future of the fortress-like U.S. embassy is increasingly in doubt. Biden said yesterday, "I don't regret my decision. Afghan leaders have come together. They've got to fight for themselves, fight for their nation." Okay. But not everyone's on board with this. I mean, you absolutely have members of the military, you have the military-industrial complex, and by extension, you have the U.S. news media pushing for extended war in Afghanistan once again, a return, a surge. All you need to do is turn on MSNBC or CNN or any of the channels and see generals. Like today we've got General this guy, and he's going to be joining us after the break as this general who served in Iraq. What do you think about the president's decision to leave Afghanistan? I think it's crazy. Well, why do you think it's crazy? Because the military-industrial complex needs to make money off of this. So I'm sorry, we were there for 20 years. You told us about the trillions of dollars that we needed to spend in Afghanistan, the countless American lives lost, the countless innocent lives Afghans lost, women and children, bombed, killed. 20 years, we've been funneling money and weapons and arms and training to propping up the Afghan government, okay? Giving them all of the weapons and training for 20 years. And we leave, and a week later, Kabul is surrounded. What more can we do? Like, how much more blood, sweat, and tears and time do we need to spend propping up a government on our own, like, because we think that that's what we should be doing around the world? I'm at a loss for words on this. I mean, the answer from the mainstream media and these members of the military is to surge back in there to help the Afghans. Within 1 week, after 20 years of training and weapons training, and you have access to our tanks and our Humvees and our and guns and missiles and bases and everything else that we've given. And in 1 week, man, we've done some pretty terrible training, I guess.
But, well, I mean, also not to mention the fact that what the Taliban, now if I'm wrong on my history on this, I know you were like more of a history person, but wasn't the Taliban once the Mujahideen, and didn't we actually train and arm them?
Yes.
So yes. Not our problem, but the people you're fighting, we also trained. Good luck.
Oh, that's exactly the case. You know, and U.S. officials telling the press that Kabul will fall to the Taliban within 90 days. And perhaps within the month. You know, it's amazing. One official who, like others, spoke on the condition of anonymity due to the issue's sensitivity said Tuesday that the U.S. military now assesses a collapse could occur within 90 days. Others said it could happen within a month. Some officials said that although they were not authorized to discuss the assessment, they see the situation in Afghanistan as more dire than it was in June. when intelligence officials assessed a fall could come as soon as 6 months after the U.S. leaves. Meanwhile, the U.S. is still raining down explosives. I mean, we're murdering Afghan civilians on a daily basis with airstrikes. So we're just slowing down the eventual Taliban takeover of Kabul long enough for the Biden administration to have its, like, you know, ridiculous sort of 9/11 victory party, essentially. Biden has said that the U.S. will continue providing air support, which is imperialism for bombing campaigns. We'll provide air support to the Afghan government for however long the government exists. Taliban fighters have already taken more than a quarter of Afghanistan's provincial capitals in less than a week. And Kabul could fall within a month. I mean, as Caitlin Collins, Johnston says, you know, this is an unforgivable outrage that cries out to the heavens for vengeance. Not the Taliban takeover. That was always the inevitable result of letting Afghanistan be controlled by Afghans. I'm talking about the invasion and the 20-year occupation of that nation by U.S. and its allies. It's only by the most aggressive narrative management and journalistic malpractice that the people around the world are not calling for the heads of the architects of this occupation. For 20 years, the world has systemically lied to that the U.S. coalition was building a government and military that could stand on its own, and that this goal was right around the corner and just needs a little bit more time, right? We just needed 20 years. These guys are ready. These guys are ready to stand on their own. We've given them billions and billions of dollars of your money, by the way. And we've got lead pipes in Michigan that are killing people, right? We can't pay for broadband access for up to 12 million kids to go to school during a pandemic, but we've absolutely paid billions of dollars so they could stand up on their own in Afghanistan. And within a few weeks, their whole everything has collapsed. Now it's crunch time, and we learned that they've been building in Afghanistan this entire time. What they've been building there was an entire fake movie set made of cardboard. The cost of that fake movie set, more than $2 trillion we've spent in Afghanistan. Just wrap your heads around that for a second. Want to see why I get so freaking angry about that? $2 trillion. What could $2 trillion have done in the United States? Can you imagine? And you have senators and bitching and whining about spending $1 trillion on our nation's infrastructure. Literally. You have Ted Cruz and Rand Paul and Donald Trump threatening to primary these people because they wanted to spend $1 trillion on infrastructure in the United States, on roads and bridges and schools. And Ted Cruz says this is an outrage. This is socialism. Oh, what about the $2 trillion you just spent trying to create a country in Afghanistan that you supported?
And you know the military budget's not going to go down if we're not in Afghanistan. So it's not like that money is ever going to come back. They could take that so that they're like, okay, we're no longer at war. If we had no wars going on, our military budget would not decrease. So we still like look at this as like, no, we can't do anything about the homelessness situation in the United States. As like houselessness is escalating, like healthcare is escalating, education, all of this stuff is adding up. They could fix it. And instead, they're just like, no, we have to keep this military up at this level.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And, you know, it's like the movie Falling Down with Michael Douglas, right? Great, great movie. And he admits, like when he goes to he finds that highway project, right? And they're not even working on that highway project. And he's like, this thing has been closed for months. They're not even doing any work on this thing. Like, what are they doing? And he brings a missile launcher, right? And he shoots it and blows it up or whatever. But the guy admits that they're literally not doing any work on it. They're only doing it just so they can make sure that their budget gets used so they may get more money next year. It's the same thing. Sean Dowling says, are you being hyperbolic or did they actually build a movie set? I'm using that as a metaphor. All I'm saying is the whole thing was a phony movie set the whole time. Like you've been telling us for 20 years under Obama, under George W. Bush, under Trump, that we're making sure these guys can support themselves, democracy. Democracy. And we're giving them all of the guns. We've spent $2 trillion in Afghanistan. And within a few weeks of us leaving, the Taliban is taking over. And what are we doing? Air support, bombing schools. 20 civilians killed in Helmand province. Health clinic, school destroyed. Mm-hmm. So we, you know, this is what we're doing to support them. Okay? So this is how we help. You know, this is what we're doing. B-52 bomber strikes, blowing these people up. Killing children and blowing up schools. But you won't see this covered in America. No, what you'll see is, hey, Taliban is surrounding the Capitol, and we need to get back out there. We need to get back out there, President Biden. You're delusional for leaving. Get out there and help these people. Help these people.
You know, it's another thing, like, because it kind of tying back to the corporate vaccine mandates and how, you know, like, it just favors the executives. You know, like, what is an actual soldier make per year? I mean, it's something like $30,000 a year, right? I mean, mm-hmm. Somebody correct me if I'm wrong, but like, so all of those trillions we spent, it didn't really go to the people that were actually there fighting. It's going to like executives at these companies that are building bombs, that are building tanks. You know, it's like the same people making money off of that. And again, you have the, like, you know, like in their view, like the peons, they're not making any of that.
Right.
So
no, you know, because like, the argument they always say, well, I always support the troops. You know, that's what they always say. So you'll have these senators that are like, yeah, I supported increasing the defense budget because I want to support our troops. You're not supporting the troops. If you supported the troops, they'd be making a great freaking salary and they wouldn't be in a war zone anymore. Like, I mean, if that's really what we're talking about here, then that's, you're not supporting the troops. You're supporting the military industrial complex and you're making millions and billions. You're making them billions of dollars. That's what's happening. That's what you're supporting. And look at the Veterans Affairs, Clinton. You know, you talk about all the problems that the veterans, the VA, and people can't get help. So, I mean, give me a break. Then you have a lot of veterans that say, I do get great care at the VA. That's great. Finally, after many years of like them getting crapped on at the VA, like, but this is the kind of stuff that, you know, this is what we're dealing with now. Let me know in the chat what you think about this. So don't, again, just don't fall for this. When you're watching the mainstream media and you're seeing all the coverage of the Taliban and you're telling it, you know, President Biden, you got to get back out there. We need to support a surge in Afghanistan. We need to get back out there. We need to, you know, we need to ramp up airstrikes. We need a special new aircraft that are just going to be high above the ground. We're getting our soldiers out of there, but we're going to put more soldiers on just bombing and keeping the Taliban out with these surgical airstrikes. Great. And how many innocent people get killed when they do this crap? Unbelievable. All right. Do you have a junk food addiction? Do you know anyone that does have a junk food addiction? I do. Like, if you're an American, you pretty much know somebody who's got a junk food addiction, right? Or who's eating crappy processed foods on a regular basis. When you go to the grocery store, most people don't like go around the outskirts and go to the greenery section, right? And buy like vegetables and fresh fruits and stuff like that. Most people are going right to like the processed food aisle, right? To get the macaroni and cheese, the highly processed foods and the chips and the candies and all that kind of stuff. And the sodas and that huge industry that makes so much money. A new report out this morning is really troubling on America's fast food addiction. And we wrote about it in the newsletter this morning. I hope you subscribe to our daily newsletter if you go to morninginvest.com. But the new study this morning we talked about comes to us from the Journal of American Medical Association. It shows that 67% of calories consumed by children and adolescents comes from junk food. 67% of your calories comes from highly processed crap in the United States. Okay, I'm talking about the United States now. Junk food is defined as ultra-processed foods, meaning frozen pizza, microwavable meals, chips, cookies, chicken nuggets. The study published in the Journal of American Medical Association studied 33,000 children. This isn't just like 200 kids. 33,000. Ages 2 to 19 years old. And the authors correlated their findings with a steady increase in obesity in children, as well as cardiovascular disease and certain cancers later in life. So they found that over the years of studying this, this is the largest study ever done on processed food and how it affects our bodies. Correlation between obesity in children and then cardiovascular disease and cancers later in life. In 1999, the same study found that 61% of children's diets were made up of junk food, meaning that it's now grown 6% in the United States in the last two decades. And everyone made fun of, you know, all the right-wing television stations made fun of Michelle Obama for wanting to have the, you know, have a garden at the White House and eat fresh vegetables. And I mean, it was ridiculous. I remember like right-wing television stations were like, you know what, Michelle Obama, stay out of my kitchen. Stay out of my kitchen. If I want to eat a big juicy burger and chicken nuggets for lunch, I can do that. That's my American right, they would say. Yeah, sure is. Right? Just like it's your right to not get vaccinated and die, it's your right to get cardiovascular disease and have hardening of the arteries and get cancer as a result of it. And then who pays for that? The entire system pays for that because, overrun with that type of medical care. So the largest growth in junk food diets was in Black non-Hispanic youth, according to the data. Mexican-American youths actually had a relatively low percentage of processed food in their diets, which the authors attributed to more home cooking in the Hispanic families. Are any of you Hispanic watching the show right now? Can you say that that's the case in your family, that you probably cook more at home so you're not eating all of this processed crap? I'm very close to a Mexican family and said, we just never grew up eating this crap. Like, we didn't go to like McDonald's. We didn't go to Burger King. We didn't go to those places. And when I would, it would taste funny to me. Like, we were used to eating fresh food. And so we just wouldn't eat that stuff. The family education level in the study also did not seem to be a factor, meaning that this is a pattern for both educated and uneducated parents alike. It doesn't matter if they're wealthy, educated, it doesn't matter. So given that processed foods weaken the immunity and the whole foods strengthen it, researchers suggest that now, say during a pandemic, is a good time to actually think about meaningful changes to school lunch programs and getting rid of those vending machines in schools. Like, they don't have that in European schools where you can literally walk down and see a vending machine that's filled with garbage. You know why? Because the companies pay the schools, and so they get these things shoved in there, soda machines and all this crap. Amazing. It's not surprising. The biggest angle on this, though, regardless of the fact that we are addicted to processed food in the United States and we have one of the worst diets in the world, is that the U.S. government is essentially subsidizing the junk food addiction. And that's the main point of the story that I want to bring you today. New study claims that Americans who consume federally subsidized products are 37% more likely to be obese. Yeah, while in the White House, First Lady Michelle Obama made it her duty to set the country's youth on a healthier path. Still, nearly 75% of the country is overweight or obese, with men, women, and children gleaning the majority of their calories from foods like pizza, pasta, and ice cream. And the U.S. government has had a larger hand in America's junk food addiction than previously thought. The U.S. has long supported the production of ingredients that go into junk foods, like corn, soybeans, and meat that get turned into sweeteners, industrial oils, and processed foods. So, again, as according to the New York Times says, they were also significantly more likely to have belly fat, abnormal cholesterol, high levels of blood sugar, and CRP, a marker of inflammation. Though it would be difficult to pin the entire obesity epidemic on the government, especially in a week when Kellogg's has been trying to pass off Frosted Flakes as vegetables, which is the truth. Do you remember that? Researchers believe the study is consistent with previous reports that claim that subsidized foods tend to be of poor quality and ultimately harmful to one's health, and taxpayers are paying the privilege of making our country sick. Because the U.S. subsidies program started to help faltering farmers, and what are they supporting? They're supporting the exact crap that goes into these commodity crops. Right? Agricultural policies are not aligned with the public health goals. So, folks, you know, that's the thing. We are subsidizing, the United States taxpayers are subsidizing these awful, I mean, the fact that why do you think high fructose corn syrup exists? And the corn lobby, why is that subsidized by the federal government? Why are you paying for this stuff to be in sugars and pastas? Like, why is American pasta have high fructose corn syrup in it? Do you ever go to Italy? Do you ever have fresh pasta? Where is the high fructose corn syrup ingredient when an Italian is making fresh pasta for dinner? Tell me. Why are we shoving this stuff into all of our foods and making us the fattest country in the world and the unhealthiest country in the world? And government just sits back, and we're meant to be ignorant. And that's why I want to do this story, so we can fight back against these people. You know, talk to your senators, talk to your members of Congress, and tell them to stop supporting the subsidies of this crap. Wouldn't it be amazing if they supported broccoli and they supported locally sourced foods?
Just think about like cornfields. You know, I grew up in Indiana, where there's, you know, just corn everywhere. And how much of that like high quality agricultural soil is actually being used on subsidized corn that's just for corn syrup or ethanol? It's not even like vegetable food production for even cattle to eat. It's all just used for the corn syrup or ethanol plants. And it's like, how much of our top agricultural land is being used to subsidize that junk food industry?
Almost all of it, right? Yeah. I mean, look at this data. You know, smaller farms that grow fruits and vegetables are often left out in the cold when it comes to government money, while producers of commodity crops rake in the majority of the cash. You know, they make the money. Billions of dollars in support that goes out every year. Kellogg's can get some money, right? You know, like when Kellogg's wants to say, hey, you know, cereal is a vegetable. No, cereal is a vegetable, according to Fruit Loops.
Didn't Congress vote, like, I mean, it's like 5 or 10 years ago, but didn't they actually pass something that made ketchup and essentially pizza, yeah, when talking about school lunches, made those classified as a serving of vegetables?
Yeah, exactly. So the ketchup lobby or whatever, and by the way, ketchup has corn syrup in it, so it's the corn syrup lobby. So if you ever read the side of a ketchup, it says, I think it says corn syrup, right? It says high fructose corn syrup.
Yeah.
So it's the fructose corn syrup lobby in the United States, and so they got the subsidies, they got that classified as a vegetable, so that could be a part of the food pyramid and then shoved in schools. So, hey, pizza and high fructose corn syrup ketchup in our nation's schools. That's a vegetable. Just like apparently French fries are a vegetable, according to the U.S. government. I mean, you know, indeed, a serving of Kellogg's flagship Frosted Flakes contains 10 grams of sugar. While Frosted Mini Wheats delivers 11 grams of sugar, the rough equivalent of 3 Oreo cookies. So they basically want to say that these are, you know, look, because cereal sales have been dropping. I mean, who eats cereal? I mean, I don't know. My kids have never once had a bowl of cereal, and I'm very proud of that. As a kid, I used to grow up on that crap. I used to sit there and have Cheerios every day, and I'd sprinkle sugar. I had the sugar bowl, you know, in the 1980s, and I'd sprinkle sugar on it. And then at the bottom of the milk, I would scrape the sugar out of the, you know, at the bottom.
You're grossing me out right now. That makes me feel slightly uncomfortable.
It was disgusting.
Yeah, like
it was disgusting.
I'm pretty sure. I'm pretty sure I did that too. And so I'm having the visceral response of thinking about it now, like imagining myself eating that sugar milk. I think I would just give up.
Yeah, Bandits Bud says, "Wait a minute, Fruit Loops are real fruit, right?" LOL. Yeah, but yeah, I mean,
so years ago, when my daughter was like 6, we went to Indiana, and she didn't grow up on any of that stuff either, like mostly non-processed food. And so we went to Indiana and just like hang out with my family. That's all everybody ate. And so for days, my daughter just wouldn't eat anything. She just wouldn't. Like, so somebody gave her instant mashed potatoes, and she's like, I don't know what this is. I'm not eating this. So after about a couple of days of it, we just had to break down. I had to go to the grocery store and just buy a bunch of like broccoli and carrots and just stuff that she would actually eat. So it's crazy.
That's amazing. But I love that, like, you know, we talk about when you go to the grocery store, you should only shop around the perimeter of the grocery store. This has become a, quite a meme, right? That you just go through the vegetable aisle and the fruits and vegetables aisle, like around the outside, right? That's where the healthiest stuff usually is, right? And so that's why Kellogg's, when you would go to like a Meijer store in the Midwest supermarkets, you would see like all, you'd see the broccoli and you'd see apples and salad greens. And then right there above it, Kellogg's started paying the grocery stores to make sure that Fruit Loops was sitting right there next to the broccoli in the perimeter of the aisle, even though it doesn't belong, it belongs in the cereal aisle with the other sugary foods. But they're basically saying, hey, you know, Fruit Loops, there's some fruit in this. So you gotta buy this crap. Oh my God. America.
Several of our workers ate broccoli at lunch. This is practically a vegetable.
Oh yeah. Yeah. They had a choice. They're like, oh, should I have the Fruit Loops or should I eat this head of broccoli? I came to the fruit and vegetable aisle to buy vegetables, and I decided to go home with some sugary cereal. So of course, because you know sales of cereal have been declining for years, so of course they want to stick this crap in the vegetable aisle to try to drive up sales. But folks, oh my God, I mean, this is what we're facing in the United States. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but this is. This isn't the only way we get through this stuff is we get uncomfortable. We report the stories. We report the facts. You can go back to your family, share these stories, share our channel with your loved ones that need a kick in the pants. You've got some uncles and nephews and so forth that refuse to pay attention to reality. Refuse to pay attention to the facts. We try to do that here on the show. So thank you so much for subscribing to the channel. Joining us here in the chat every day. I really appreciate it. Linda, Arlene, Nathaniel, Kathy, Francis Bragg, Art Sullivan, Jonathan Stewart, Tamala Parker, Betty Boop is here, Yonda Connie. Yeah, Yonda says, I used to eat cereal when I was a kid too. Now I don't even drink milk. Kristen says, it feels really good to discuss real topics. Thank you, Kristen. Your Imperial Majesty.
I will confess to one thing. There's one junk food that I do like. I don't get it very often, but and it's a bit weird. But I like SpaghettiOs with Frank's, and I don't warm it up. I'll just open the can and eat it right out of the can. And I so like every like month or two, I'm like, gosh, I really need some of those SpaghettiOs. That's my one weakness. I don't eat ice cream. I don't do sugary foods. But that one junk food, I just every now and then have to have it.
I hear you. We've all got our vices, you know. But the problem is that. Most people aren't just eating it sporadically, you know, it's subsidized. So they're eating it every day because it's cheap. Right. And that's the problem. Is it in poor communities and lower income communities? They don't have access to the fresh vegetables, the foods that are actually helpful that would prevent disease. I really believe that. I mean, it comes like disease to me. I mean, and all the science really just comes right down to diet inflammation. You know, you eat this stuff. That's where we get our cancers from. That's where we get these diseases from. It's from our diet. And so it's so sad in these communities where they just don't have quality foods. You know, they build a Whole Foods store in rich neighborhoods, but not in Bluefield, West Virginia, unfortunately.
Yeah. What they call food deserts where it's not even that people aren't trying to eat healthy. They would have to drive 50 to 100 miles just to find fresh produce.
Mm-hmm. It's awful. Hey, but they can get cheap ass subsidized government, canned stuff filled with sugar. It keeps us fat and inflamed and we
government
get cancer.
Cheese.
Oh, so sad. So sad. Thank you guys for subscribing to the channel. If you're new here, please just smash that subscribe button and turn on the little bell notification because we will publish videos throughout the day. But we are live every morning here at 8:30 a.m. Eastern time. So you can join us every morning, join the chat, get uncomfortable with us as we report the stories that I think matter that you're not going to see covered in the mainstream media. Peace out, everyone. Grover says, have a great day. Philip, have a great day. See you back here.
Yep, you too.
We'll see you back here mañana. Peace.